I, as we all do, spend quite a lot of time sort of, researching the games that we commentate on and dig up all these things. And, I'm quite lucky in that my career actually started a couple of years before the Premier League started. So I have been working right across the piece of the Premier League. And I just found more and more as time went by, seasons went by, we're 23 years now into the Premier League, that stuff kind of gets half forgotten, and when you dig it up again, it takes you by surprise. And I found I was being surprised more and more often by some of the things that I was finding in my research. And I just thought, well, this is interesting. Maybe there's a way of getting a book together out of all this stuff. I decided to do it, that it needed some kind of framework so it wasn't too rambling. And I sort of came up with the On This Day thing, so hence the title Match of the Day 365, because 365, well, in fact, I've done February the 29th as well, so it's really 366 days, picking out one big fact that has happened across the Premier League era from 93 through to 2015 on each day of the year.
That okay, I mean, you could say that certain days maybe aren't so busy, but actually, over the period of the Premier League, now 20 plus years,
yeah,
you're going to cover off, there's going to be a match on every single one of those days, there's going to be something that's happened. How did you go about editing? How did you go about deciding? Was it purely you? Did you ask advice?
Yes, I mean, I suppose ultimately it was my call, because you're right, if particularly in those days in May when seasons are finishing and there's, often Champions League finals or teams have won the league, and you find that some of these coincide. What I wanted to do, therefore, was not to sort of be inundated by, fans of whoever saying, hold on a second, you've written about that, but we did this on that day. So I've included a kind of also on this day section. So I've picked out one particular fact, which I've written in some depth about, but then you'll also get others saying that, for example, Manchester United win the Champions League on the same day Chelsea win the Premier League. Well, which do you do? So over the course of the year, I've tried to even it out so it's not just all Man United or Chelsea or indeed all the big clubs. I wanted to include England stories, Scotland stories, Republic of Ireland stories, World Cups, and some of the lesser, in inverted commas, clubs as well, because the Premier League has been about 50 odd clubs over the 23 years. It's not just about the top four, and I wanted them all to have a part in that.
Yeah, absolutely. Neil Redfern went down with half of them, I think.
So, in consecutive seasons.
Yes. Did he do three on the bounce?
I think he did. Yes, he did. I think you're absolutely... Was it Barnsley, Charlton and somebody else? Bradford?
I think he was with Bradford,
sure. Yeah.
And Malky Mackay's got a similar record, but we're not allowed to talk about him these days, apparently. Was there a fact that before you even started researching other ones, or you started having a look at certain dates and going, "Wow, that's quite nice," was there something that you definitely were going to get in? That's whether it was your birthday, you knew something that happened on your birthday, or was there something you thought, "Well, that's my standout moment. That's going in, whatever anything else goes in."
Well, there were some things that, absolutely had to go in. For a start off, teams winning the Champions League. You can't ignore teams winning the Champions League. You can't ignore David Beckham being sent off against Argentina, or Michael Owen scoring in that game. That is one of the great games of the era, because although it's the Premier League era, it's not just the Premier League, it's everything that's happened within those 23 years, including international Champions League, as I say. So, they were musts. And then when you think about, the Premier League, there were transfers that absolutely had to go in. Sol Campbell, leaves Spurs and goes to Arsenal. Well, one of the most controversial transfers ever. That deserves its own entry, and it gets it. Stan Collins more for Liverpool against Newcastle in the famous 4-3 game. Again, that was something that, had to be an entry on its own. Keegan resigning from Newcastle, again, that had to be in there. But there's lesser stuff as well. I mean, for example, today, over the years, the one I've picked out today is actually when Sunderland got permission to build themselves a new ground and move out of Roker Park. Mm. So, but also on this day, 2012, Steven Gerrard won his 100th England cap. In 2012, 2009, the Republic of Ireland lost the first leg of that playoff to France for the World Cup. The second leg was the Henri handball.
Yeah.
Get its own entry. That's another one of those standout moments. Chelsea thrashed Lazio today, 12 years ago in the Champions League. There was a Blackburn Celtic UEFA Cup tie on this day 13 years ago. And way back in 97, Ron Atkinson took over as manager of Sheffield Wednesday. So they all get a line. But the one I decided to pick out on today was the Sunderland one, probably as much as anything, because Sunderland maybe hadn't featured all that much in the book. And I thought, well, you know, I want to get him in.
Plus, it was an epochal moment, really, for the football club.
It was.
The Roker Park, very evocative, but of a different period. Maybe the decision to build a new stadium is all about what the Premier League has been about in many respects, in
of
that
course.
Massive change that's been thrust upon English football.
Of course, and I mean, you know, the change is really quite difficult to quantify. The league is kind of unrecognisable, if you like, from the league which began back in the 92-93 season. I mean, the opening day of the Premier League was the 15th of August 1992. There were 9 matches played on that day, and of the starting lineups on that day, 198 players started those 9 inaugural matches. Only 9 of those 198 were not either British or Irish.
Wow.
So that's how much it's changed, you know? 189 of them qualified to play for one of the UK nations or the Republic of Ireland, and only 9 didn't. That's extraordinary. Other amazing things. I mean, for example, 26th of January 1993, the lowest ever Premier League crowd. And this amazed me, even though I went to a lot of games at that ground in that era. You know, just how low it was extraordinary. I mean, are you happy to have a little guess?
What
do you think?
Guess, yeah, go on. So what was the date again?
It's 1993, 26th of January. Not that makes much difference, but it's the lowest ever Premier League crowd.
Is it at Oldham?
No.
Oh.
No, it's at Selhurst when Wimbledon were ground sharing.
Oh, of course.
And you know, you think of now, I mean, you know, one of the complaints in a way is that it's like a West End show. You know, you can't get a seat, and if you know, it's hard to afford one, and even if you can afford one, it's hard to get one.
Yeah.
Well, let me tell you, 26th of January 1993, you could have had a lot of seats for Wimbledon versus Everton at Selhurst Park, because it was the lowest ever Premier League crowd, and it was only just a little bit over 3,000.
Wow.
3,039, and that is a record which will, I'm sure, never be beaten.
No, I wouldn't have thought so, and that's long before the protests about, you know, Wimbledon being moved, and,
yeah,
and the, you know, that's when,
yeah,
the crowds completely dropped off. But even then, they were still getting 2,000, you know, when people had turned their backs on,
that's right,
on Milton Keynes and becoming AFC Wimbledon. Actually, this is almost like an impossible task, though, isn't it, Steve? Because, as you say, for every half a dozen facts that you could find for one day, someone else might go, well, what about this? What about,
yeah,
that?
Yeah, absolutely.
I suppose it makes for a
course.
Sequel. It does make for a, yeah, sequel.
Well, you never know. You know, you never know. But no, you're right. I mean, for example, you know, one of the great Premier League moments, you know, which obviously had to be in there as an entry on its own, was Sergio Aguero's title-winning goal in 2012. You know, for Manchester City against QPR, the last kick, yeah, of the season, and wins the league. And you know, but on that day, on the same day in 2007, was the day that Carlos Tevez kept West Ham up, winning the game at Old Trafford. You know, which had its own story attached to that. So you know, I've managed to get both stories in. On the day, I chose the Aguero goal, and I've written in some depth about that. In the also on this day section, obviously, I've mentioned the Carlos Tevez thing. But on the day that Carlos Tevez came to England, I've managed to write a little bit in depth about how, you know, what a controversial move it was, the whole thing of third, yeah, party ownership, and how it landed West Ham in such hot water ultimately. And you know, the beef that Sheffield United have about all that. And they still have that beef these, yeah, you know, all these years later, because they went down, West Ham didn't. And of course, Sheffield United have never been back. And in a way, even though West Ham have been up and down over the years since, you know, as they're about to move into the Olympic Stadium, you know, who knows how different might it had been,
sure,
if that decision had gone against them.
I was at both of those games, actually.
Yeah.
Luckily, this
yeah,
job that we have, I was at the Aguero one, which is extraordinary. The West,
yeah,
Ham United one was extraordinary.
Well, it was also, of course, 13th of May is also Yaya Toure's birthday.
Of course, yeah.
And,
well, we didn't take a cake, did we?
That's right. And in 2014, I mean, I love this quote. I mean, it's just amazing, really. So 2014, 13th of May, Yaya's 31st birthday, his agent Dimitri Seluk, if you remember, revealed that he was extremely upset that Manchester City hadn't bought him a present. And Seluk said, Yaya got a cake. When it was Roberto Carlos's birthday, the president of Angie bought him a Bugatti.
Just from your memory then, I mean, as you said, you've been covering football since just before the Premier League era. What's your, without the use of a fantastic tome that can spark memory, can spark debate, can spark reminiscences, and that's, I think, the beauty of your book, Steve, in many respects. You go, I remember seeing that, or you can even if you don't support a Premier League team, it could spark, well, I remember coming back, I was watching, yeah, you know, someone, because I was watching Rochdale that day, and I remember hearing that on the radio, and we'd just beaten, you know, Bury 1-0, whatever. But from your point of view, what are the standout memories covering football over the whole period, Steve? Is there a game, is there a moment, is there a goal which you think, well, I was just privileged to be there?
Yes, I mean, I did commentate on David Beckham's goal from the halfway line against Wimbledon back in the day, years ago, before I joined the BBC, on another London radio station.
You can mention it, yeah. Yeah,
Capital Gold in the old days. So I did commentate on that. I did Rooney's overhead kick against Manchester City in the Manchester derby, you know, arguably perhaps the best goal Rooney's ever scored. So goals like that stand out. But I think for games over the course of my career, games that I've been at, I think I am still going to be asked in 30 years' time, probably, as long as I'm still around, about the World Cup semi-final in 2014 when, you know, I was lucky enough to be in Belo Horizonte when Brazil lost 7-1 at home to Germany. And, you know, I was really proud, actually, or pleased, I'd say, because I dug up this statistic, which Brazil had not lost a competitive game on home soil since 1976. So from 1976 to 2014, they had not lost a competitive game on home soil. All the qualifyings that they played, Copa America games, all the rest of it, they were unbeaten. And then, of course, when it happened in style. And I think that would be the most extraordinary game of football I've ever seen and probably ever likely to see.
Yeah, the days that are during the regular football season are going to be easy.
Yeah.
So outside of that, you know, the there are tournaments, thankfully. There are periods of time where that gets filled. Was that the most challenging element, though, the sort of the July time, the June to early June time?
Well, in a way, but having said that, you get, you get big transfers, of course, at that time of year. So, for example, you know, Alan Shearer in 1996 went for £15 million to Newcastle, you know, turning his back on Manchester United to join his boyhood club. You know, that's in there. Sergio Aguero joining Manchester City. Raul turning down a move to Chelsea in 2003 when they tried to make him the best paid player in the world, and it turned out that money couldn't actually buy you absolutely everything. There was the Grobbelaar Fashion News Sega's allegations of match fixing that happened in July in 1995. Also in there, I couldn't resist putting it in, and I do apologise to Spurs fans, but it's one of those great football little oddities. The Cologne 8 Spurs 0 result in the Intertoto Cup in 1995. You know, Tottenham don't really recognise it because it wasn't what anyone would recognise as a Tottenham team.
No.
But it is officially their heaviest ever defeat, and Cologne very uncharitably took it extremely seriously and thrashed Spurs 8-0. And Stephen Carr made his debut, of course, went on to be a very good right back for Spurs. Mark Newson was on loan from Barnet, and Spurs also, of course, as I think Spurs fans probably know, making a brief interlude in his career. Alan Pardew, who was a free agent at the time, played in that game and went on to sign for Barnet, actually. But, you know, so Intertoto Cup is one of those funny things, you know. So in fact, the toughest day to fill, I suppose, Phil, was Christmas Day.
Yeah.
And for Christmas Day, I gave my old friend Martin Keown a ring just to try and get a sort of footballer's insight on what they do on Christmas Day. And he has a nice little story to tell about smuggling chocolate into a team hotel behind Arsene Wenger's back.
This will be a book that will be opened up, no doubt, on Christmas Day. It may be where people first turn to, Steve. It's a fantastic present in that respect.
Well, I hope so. I think, I mean, you know, in all honesty, you know, it's 400 and something pages. Don't read it from cover to cover. 442 magazine very kindly described it as perfect toilet reading, and I wouldn't disagree. You know, you can read a day or two at a time, or just pick out your birthdays, your anniversary, see what happened, kid's birthday, whatever it is. You know, it's not really designed to be read 460 pages one after another.
And let's face it, commentators are going to use it on a regular basis because we all love
facts. I hope so. I mean, I have to say, apart from finding it hugely enjoyable to read, to write, you know, it gave me a lot of material, some of which I've already used in my commentaries.